know that sound. Our next guest on Downtown is one half of a musical duo that's been making music for more than four decades now. Along the way, Air Supply has racked up over a dozen hits on the Billboard charts here in America, including eight songs that went to the top five. They're out on tour right now, and that tour will bring them to the State Theater in Portland on Sunday, February 6th, starting at 8 p.m. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by Air Supply's Russell Hitchcock. Well, first up, Russell, we are very excited to have you guys come to Maine for a show coming up at the State Theater in Portland on February 6th. We'll try and make it a little warmer than it's been when you get here.
Well, we were just in Michigan and somewhere else last weekend. It was like minus one and 12, so I've got a bit of a respite this week in California, but we'll be rugged up, that's for sure.
All right, wonderful. Well, let's talk about what's been an amazing career for you and Graham. Everybody's got those dates in their life that they remember, but I know one of the big ones for you is May 12th, 1975.
Correct, yeah, that's the day I met Graham. We were both in a production of Jesus Christ Superstar in Australia, and we were actually placed together at several instances during rehearsals, so we got to know each other pretty quickly. But it was only about 2 weeks after we first met that we started to work on some of Graham's material, and we thought we sounded pretty good singing together, and I'd never heard anybody that had written their own stuff before, so that was a real fascination for me, and we just clicked, and as they say, the rest is history.
Well, indeed it is. Now, the name Air Supply, was that you or Graham who had that come to them in a dream?
Yeah, Graham. We were actually looking. We recorded a single with a record company in Australia, and we didn't have a name for the band, so we had to make a decision pretty quickly. And we both said to each other, "Who thinks of the best thing as quickly as possible? We'll use." So he came in to rehearsal the following day, and he said, "I had a dream last night that I saw this billboard with lights around it, and Air Supply was in the middle of the billboard." So I said, "Sounds good to me." And Air is a Gemini is an air sign. We're both Gemini, so it was a bit cosmic. But we thought we'd stick with it, and it's certainly done us some great service over the years.
Well, indeed, it has. Rod Stewart reached out to you guys. You ended up opening for him on a tour. What was that experience like?
Well, if you consider that when we got the invitation to first of all play with him in Australia, we'd only been a band for 2 months, and then after the second show in Australia with him, he asked us to come to the US. So I don't know if anybody can imagine that, the shock and what's going on here, because I'd never been in a band before that was professional, and to be in the spotlight to the degree that we were. Of course, we were the opening act and nobody had heard of us. But to play 50, I think we played 50 or 60 dates with him all over North America, including places that, you dreamt about, Madison Square Garden, all the major baseball parks. It was just an amazing experience. And, of course, we weren't young when we started the band, as young as, a lot of the kids are that begin in music. So we took every opportunity to watch every show that he performed. We learned about stagecraft and relating to audiences. We learned about lighting and sound and the business side of the business. It was quite an education for us, though. It was invaluable, and he was so kind in, first of all, letting us go on tour with him, but he was very, very kind to us. We didn't get to hang out with him very often, but when we did, he is a gentleman and treated us like not quite equals, but as close as you could.
What's the key to that? Because when I watch recent live performances, you guys, you have that ability. Rod Stewart did the best, all do, to perform in front of a huge arena, a stadium, a concert hall, hundreds, thousands of people, but make everybody feel like you're singing just to them.
Well, I think the music has a lot to do with that. Because it is so personal. Everybody that comes to speak to us at any time always has a story about a song. Jesus Christ Superstar taught us discipline and focus and, you know, those things that you really need when you're on stage. Watching Rod, it taught us how to relate to an audience if they weren't, you know, feeling the way you wanted them to. And it happens, you know, sometimes you go out because, you know, after a few, well, not a few years, after quite a few years, you get kind of used to getting the response, you know, and when it doesn't happen sometimes, you know, Graham and I go, "Ooh, what's going on here?" You know, but it's nothing. It's our job to make the audience respond, not the other way around. Mm. And for me personally, I usually, when we go on stage, because I can only see, you know, so many rows back, I typically focus on, you know, two or three people, and but I make eye contact with as many as I can. I think that's a big thing. And that kind of intimate thing during a stage show, it seems to spread around those people and, you know, eventually to everybody. I mean, I just recently saw a band that I've been a fan of forever, and they sounded amazing, but they did nothing to generate any kind of experience with an audience. And I find that, you know, it's just not what we do. It's not our thing. I mean, before the pandemic, we used to go into the audience for one of our songs, and we were doing that for 30 years plus. Before the pandemic shut that down. So to even have that advantage to go in and be able to physically touch people and see the expressions on their faces up close and all that stuff. We've always worked at that. I've said to the, you know, whatever incarnation of the band there is, and I still do it to this day. I mean, if we play a place that's, you know, multi-level balconies and there are people kind of, you know, up in the rooftops, I always tell the guys, don't forget, there's not the audience just in front of you. They're to the sides, they're up the top, they're way in the back. So make sure that you gesture or do something to make them feel included. I think that's really important. And, you know, at this point, it's not, well, we have to do that. I love doing it. I love to get as many people involved in the show as I can.
We're talking with Russell Hitchcock of Air Supply here on Downtown. Well, you guys recorded Lost in Love, I think, in 77, early 78. It was a big hit in Australia. And then it came to the attention of Clive Davis, who reached out and offered you a contract. And then you became absolute international sensations. Can anybody be prepared for that level of success and attention?
Well, you can't, because, you know, once again, when we first got off at the Rod Stewart tour in North America, we didn't have a clue. And when we had the success with Lost in Love on a worldwide basis, it was overwhelming. And the fact that we had, you know, another four or five songs be nearly as successful and all in the top five in America, we quite frankly didn't have time to stop and realize what was going on, because it was, you know, we'd tour from February till December, and then we'd go back to Australia in those early days and record an album and then come back and tour again. So we didn't have time to stop and smell the roses. And I think probably that was a good thing, because it, you know, we never got big-headed about it. We never took it for granted. We were thrilled when we got, in those days, you'd get the chart results every week and see where you were and, you know, what the sales were and stuff like that. And once again, because we weren't teenagers when we started, I think we were very level-headed when we got into the business and took the successes, you know, and we still say today, you know, we still have to work as hard as we did, if not more than we did in the early days, because it's not easy to achieve success, but it's way, way more difficult to sustain it.
You had a great run, seven straight top five singles. One of my favorite Air Supply songs was a Jim Steinman tune, Making Love Out of Nothing at All. Now, we think of Jim, who passed away within the last year, his great collaboration with Meatloaf. But, gosh, that song seemed like it was written specifically for your voice. What a wonderful match that was.
Well, it was. I mean, it is a fantastic song. You know, ever since the song was first released, it's never been out of the show. We met Jim in New York. Our manager at the time was Don Arden, who managed Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath and Electric Light Orchestra. Very, very famous guy in the business. And he said, we should do a greatest hits record. And, you know, we we said, "You're out of your mind. We've had two albums," you know. And he said, "No." He said, "I know what we're doing. We have the package for the songs that we want to put in it. Plus, we have an offer to do a Jim Steinman song." And I obviously we'd heard of him, so we went to New York to meet him. And I found him to be very eccentric, to say the least. But you know, he said, "Here's the song," and I think it was maybe twice as long as the recorded version. And you know, everybody said, "It's too long, Jim. You can't. You know, it's not a Meatloaf album. This is supposed to be a radio friendly song." So I think he went back and did his thing, and the version that was recorded and put out was the one that you hear now. Great song. And we also had the pleasure to work with some of Bruce Springsteen's band recording the track. It was Roy Bittan on piano and Max Weinberg on drums. I think Rick Derringer played the guitar solo. I say they're all very heavy hitters, and that was, you know, awe-inspiring to be in the same studio as those guys. And obviously the song was a tremendous success, and God bless Jim, and, you know, he's done some great work, and his legacy is beyond, reproach.
Everybody's got their fans, but it seems like fans of Air Supply are especially loyal. Can you talk a little bit about the people you guys lovingly refer to as the Airheads?
Right. Well, you know, that's really is a loving thing. And they all, embrace that term. They're proud to be Airheads. We've always found it very important to have a great relationship with the fans because, you know, it's cliched, but, you know, if you don't have fans, you don't have a career. And we've done our best always to accommodate them as best we can. I don't think in my career I've turned down an autograph or a photograph more than once or twice. I mean, if people are rude to me, then I don't do that. But most of them, obviously, because they're Air Supply fans and they love us, they're very respectful of our time and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, we're having a genuine connection with them all. And I think we have, you know, over 3.5 million followers on Facebook.
How much of a thrill, speaking of fans, how much of a thrill was it to not only play for Prince Charles and Princess Diana, but then to find out that they were fans of your music?
Well, you know, you never know, do you? I mean, we've had people that quite surprised me that they were, you know, had knowledge of the band and that were genuinely fans of the group. And, I mean, it was the thrill of a lifetime to meet Princess Diana and Prince Charles, certainly. But, you know, we've played for the Sultan of Brunei. He's a big fan. Well, I don't know which one there is now, but he's a big fan. We played to quite a controversial figure, Imelda Marcos. We had dinner with her in the Philippines. Big fan. The president of Indonesia. I mean, we've met some dignitaries, that's for sure. And, you know, I have a bunch of my friends that play heavy metal, and they're big fans, but they say, "Don't tell anybody because it'll ruin our street vibe," you know. So it's great. I mean, I'm very thankful for our career and the way that we've been able to touch so many people and have as many fans as we do.
We continue to perform well over 100 dates a year, still making great music. And the most recent recording of the Lost in Love Experience, what was it like working with the Prague Symphony?
Well, I wasn't actually. Graham went to Prague to do that. That was a decision we had to make about, well, a bunch of things. But the recordings are fantastic. I mean, I would defy anybody to say any differently. And the fact that we got to release one of the recordings without instrumental versions of the songs is a true testament to how good the songs are, because even without lyrics, obviously Graham's melodies are fantastic, and the arrangements for the songs with the orchestra were unbelievable.
Well, it's coming up on 47 years that you two have been working together. Famously, you say you've never had a fight or a major disagreement. How much of that is because you each have distinct roles within the band?
I think that's probably 90% of it. You know, we don't step on each other's toes in any area. I mean, I know what my role is in Air Supply. It's to sing the songs that Graham writes. And I can't write songs. I don't play any instruments. Graham doesn't want to be the lead singer, certainly. And fortunately, from day one, we found out just how much we had in common. as far, and he's English, obviously, and I'm Australian, and, you know, so we came from the same background, working class parents, and I shouldn't say obviously because people might not know, but we have the same sense of humour because Australia got all its humour from England, really. We love the Beatles. We both saw them in England and Australia, respectively, in 64, so we had that. We loved them. Like the same bands, ELO, Eagles, Bee Gees, you know, just all tied together. And there's just no reason for us to get into any kind of altercation, whether it's just, well, certainly I couldn't do it physically because he's 6'5". But, you know, there's no, I mean, and once again, it gets back to, again, that we weren't kids, you know, we both have egos that are pretty big because you have to have one to get on stage, but they don't clash, you know. I never said, you know, because I don't write songs, I want my songs on the record. He never said, I want to be out front. You know, there's just, I mean, I can't think of any instance on any level that we've ever disagreed. I mean, we've had discussions about things, but certainly never anything close to an argument. That's for sure.
Russell Hitchcock, Air Supply, he and Graham Russell coming to Portland, the State Theater, a week from Sunday night at 8 p.m. And a great conversation. Thanks to Russell for being with us here on Downtown. It's 5:36. We'll take a break. We're back. The